Morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jonathan Libby appearing on behalf of appellant Donnie Lee Walton. I intend to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Glad to help you.
Your Honor, resentencing must be ordered because Mr. Walton does not have 3 qualifying prior violent felonies necessary for sentencing under the Armed Career Criminal Act. California robbery no longer is categorically a violent felony under Dixon. At the time of Mr. Walton's sentencing, Prince was still in effect, but this court has since overruled and reversed Prince and now has made very clear that California robbery under Section 211 is categorically a violent felony. Therefore, that prior no longer counts.
You mean it's not a violent felony?
It's not a violent felony. Thank you, Your Honor. So now let's look at the Alabama robbery conviction, which is, frankly, Your Honor, is very similar to California and is very similar to several other state robbery statutes that very recently, in the last 6 months, this court has repeatedly said is also not categorically a violent felony. And specifically, the government actually filed a 20-J letter last week in which it referenced Gayozos, which is Florida statute, Molinar from Arizona, Strickland from Oregon. All of those cases are very similar to this one. In fact, looking at Molinar, the Arizona statute, nearly identical robbery law to Alabama. There it was dealing with a crime of violence under the guidelines, but looking at the same analysis applies, which is looking at the force requirements. There the court looked at various cases under Arizona law, which are nearly identical to various cases under Alabama law.
Counsel, if you're correct, based upon the changes in the case law, and you, if you've shown that 2 of these 4 cited convictions are in fact not violent felonies, then you get a reversal, right? We
That's
don't even
correct,
have
Your
Honor. To consider, now I guess, just one other statute, because I think the government's conceded that, or maybe you've withdrawn the second Alabama, the murder statute,
with respect,
right?
To the victim. That's correct, Your Honor.
But we just, you need to just have 2, right?
Just have to knock out 2. So if we knock out the California and we knock out Alabama robbery, then that would be enough to cause reversal of Mr. Walton.
And would there be any reason for us to discuss the other 2 at that point?
It would not, Your Honor, because that in fact would be enough. And, Your Honor, I can go into specific details in terms of comparing Alabama to Molinar and Gayozos and Strickland. But at this point, I'll just reserve the balance of my time and hear what the government has said.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Very good. Let's hear from the government then. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. Ashley Aul for the United States. The difference between this case and some of the recent robbery cases that have been decided by the court, I think, starts with plain error review and then goes to the Duenas-Alvarez problem that was discussed at a previous case. Under the Supreme Court's decision in Henderson, if a substantive legal question is unsettled, it forecloses the possibility of a plain error finding. Now, defendant has contested the plain error review applies here. That said, I would point the court to all of the pleadings before the district court here. This was not a case where the aggravated felony, pardon me, the crime of violence determination wasn't contested, but it was contested in a very specific, very factual way, to the point that in the court's ultimate decision resolving the parties' disputes, it noted that there was, quote, no question that the various priors all qualified, and instead the parties were disputing counting, how to count them.
But counsel, with respect, we're really talking about construction of statutes and a specific element of the statutes. There's really not very much that's factual about it. It's really a question of how these fit. And counsel has made the argument that supervening case law has made it so that the California Penal Code Section 211 and the Alabama Criminal Code Section 13841 just don't qualify anymore. It's not the government's fault. It's not the trial court's fault. It just, it's happened. Why is he wrong about that?
Specifically with respect, I think the answer is different with respect to those two statutes.
Okay.
With respect to the Alabama statute, the answer is Duenas-Alvarez. Duenas-Alvarez requires a demonstration of a reasonable possibility that a state would apply its prior in a particularly overbroad way. And I do see some, and I would admit it is narrow, but there is airspace between Molinar and Giozos and Strickland and Parnell and this case. And the difference is, well, Molinar, there's an easy one. In Arizona, there was a statutory definition of force that was overbroad. There's no statutory definition of force in Alabama. And so we are in squarely in Duenas-Alvarez territory, where we're looking at the way that courts have described.
And we have Jackson v. State about this purse snatching, and that seems to not be violent.
So Jackson v. State is an interesting example, but it's not analyzing sufficiency on with respect to force. It's analyzing sufficiency on a totally unrelated ground. And
but it was a conviction for robbery where there wasn't force. So how do we get around that?
I think there's not enough. I mean, I think as we all know as writers and jurists, facts, time expands and contracts when you have an issue that is focusing on a particular moment. The court wasn't focused on how much force was applied in that purse grabbing. It described it as tugs resulting in the purse being taken away. But I would submit if the issue were how much force was applied, we would know more about how much force was really involved in that case. I think a passing reference on an issue not raised in an intermediate state court decision is too thin a read on which to find that an entire state robbery regime is overbroad.
And you have a case that stands for that, though? I mean, we're supposed to look at the state court cases. They have this case that seems to not have force. I don't know how we can say, well, they didn't really mean it, or, I mean, maybe it goes the other way. If it didn't bother them, maybe that's a sign that all robberies in Alabama are like this. I mean, I don't know how we take it to mean that was an outlier.
I think there is some tension in Alabama law. In the 28J I filed, the Supreme Court has emphasized repeatedly that violence is required.
But that was before Jackson. Those are older cases.
They're definitely older cases. And then Jackson is a case where certainly it suggests that there might be a purse snatching that is similar to the purse snatching analyzed in the recent cases. But because that issue wasn't raised, I find it to be not compelling evidence on that point. Again,
because it wasn't raised in the district court? Or you mean in the state court?
State court, the state intermediate court there wasn't analyzing sufficiency of force. It was describing the facts in a fairly succinct way with respect to force because ultimately it was about whether or not an accomplice in the car was sufficient.
So you have an argument about why you think you should win as a matter of law on this question, but it still seems to me that it's a question of law, and I'm not sure why you're not facing a problem with your plain error standard that this is a question of law where I don't think the government has suffered any prejudice if we consider it in the first instance on appeal.
So I think that entire regime is incorrect, as Judge Graber recently described in her concurrence.
But that's not our main law, so.
Putting that aside, this court has reviewed for plain error in very similar circumstances. In Tafoya Montelongo, and I'll find it, there's a couple of things we've cited in the brief where the court specifically reviewed a determination of crime of violence at sentencing for plain error. I think those cases are exactly on point to the circumstance here, and certainly to the extent that the court had discretion to apply plain error or not to resolve the tension between Tafoya Montelongo and the pure issue of law cases, I would submit that this is not the case to skip over plain error because it matters so much to the outcome, particularly with respect to Alabama robbery. At a minimum, under Henderson, the substantive legal question is unsettled with respect to whether robbery qualifies. And that is exactly the kind of circumstance where under Henderson, the Supreme Court says that a plain error finding is foreclosed.
So from the government's perspective, even though as the purse snatching illustration is there, you think we can't look at that and determine whether, vis-a-vis the statute in this case, whether that's enough force? You think it has to be done by the original state court, or we can't really rely upon that? Is that your position?
I think that's a close articulation of the position. I get concerned where when we're dealing with these fairly difficult and wide-ranging issues of whether or not prior state convictions qualify, we end up in these fights about lower state court opinions And that, first of all, itself is somewhat questionable, but it gets worse when we're looking at state court opinions that don't even analyze the question that we're talking about.
But we have that all the time, don't we, counsel? I mean, with respect to the California robbery statute, for example, we just had all kinds of these things. And the reality is that some of them were not analyzed by the state court for the purpose that you're talking about. We simply look at the factual situation. We determine whether that makes it too broad or whatever the case may be. I'm having difficulty understanding how we can accept your approach without undermining a lot of case law that we've decided.
So plain error is the first way. I mean, I think there is no way to find that there was clear and obvious error by the district court. But Dixon is, in fact, a perfect example to the contrary. Dixon, analyzing the overbreadth of California robbery, found there was a California Supreme Court decision finding that accidental force was sufficient. It was a Supreme Court case from the state analyzing exactly the overbreadth that was analyzed in that case. That is the kind of compelling evidence that is completely absent here. We have intermediate Alabama decisions, and not very many of them, not dealing with the degree of force that is actually required. Meanwhile, we have Alabama Supreme Court decisions, albeit quite old ones, saying that some degree of violence is required.
I'm still having a little trouble with your argument. So if there are conflicting, arguably conflicting, lower state court decisions, and it becomes not a plain error issue under any analysis because, in my hypothetical, the petitioner raises in the lower district, federal district court, we think the state law means X. And we think there's no question about it, and the government says no, if there's conflicting. And you say when it gets up to us, we have to say, well, until the Supreme Court of that state decides the issue, we can't make a decision of overbreath at all? Is that your position?
No, I don't think that's accurate, Your Honor. I think certainly, look, the basic framework for analyzing this is the same. It's probably the same framework laid out in Mathis and in Taylor for determining what state law is. And in determining what state law is, this court typically goes through a kind of hierarchy of sources, starting with statute and going to the Supreme Court. And certainly, if you have a number of intermediate state court decisions analyzing force efficiency of force and finding that, as in Massachusetts, for instance, you don't need to have really any force at all. You can take something without someone noticing it, and finding that that's sufficient, I think that would be a sufficient record. But our record here is quite different from that, not only with respect to it being lower court decisions that I would submit aren't consistent in their outcome, but in that they're not even analyzing the question that is the core of the analysis here. And so what instead defendant does is cites, it's not even dicta, it's factual, it's unnecessary factual discussions from the beginning of those cases. The few cases that we have that do analyze the sufficiency of force, and it's a very small number, none of them, under Duenas-Alvarez or otherwise, demonstrate that Alabama applies its robbery statute in the overbroad way. I would submit that...
Have you suffered any prejudice from them not making this argument more clearly in the district court?
I think we have, Your Honor, in that we didn't have an opportunity to litigate these state court decisions and develop it below.
How would you have done that differently than how you've done it here?
I'll be frank. I don't know how that prejudice analysis works against the government. I think it is further evidence of the confusing nature of this exception overall. I frankly don't know how to analyze prejudice in a case like this where we're talking about legal issues and whether state law is. There certainly wasn't a factual record that we were deprived of the ability to make. And so certainly if what prejudice goes to is the deprivation of a factual record, then I would say we weren't prejudiced. That said, to the extent that there are any facts that we could have developed in the district court that this court might otherwise think were dispositive here, then I think in that case we would have prejudice, and that would also foreclose plain error.
Other questions by my colleagues? Thank you, counsel, for your presentation. Counsel, you have a little bit of rebuttal time, quite a bit of rebuttal time, actually.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, in terms of the degree of force required under Alabama law, I haven't filed a response to the government's 28J letter, but they cited to Proctor and then quoting in Proctor Evans v. State, an 1885 Alabama case, in which it said very clearly the amount of force required is resistance, however slight. That is the standard in Alabama. It's the same standard that was then the same identical language in Lear versus State in the Arizona decision. It's the exact same standard. It's not the standard required under federal law for a violent felony.
I gather your position would be, in response to my colleague's question about prejudice, that the government really didn't and doesn't suffer any prejudice by having our court analyze these cases and the facts that were referred to in those cases in terms of the degree of force required.
That's correct. I mean, they have the same opportunity to do that here as they would have in the district court.
Okay.
Unless the court has any additional questions.
Unless you have another presentation, we thank you for your argument, both counsel. The case just argued is submitted.